imagining a world without birds. Good morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross. This is First Coast Connect, and thanks for listening. And just ahead this morning, why two new studies say North American birds are at the risk of going completely extinct. What are your questions? Give us a call. It's 549-2937. Then later, some safety tips this Halloween from a former CIA agent. That's later. But first this morning, two sobering new studies say North American birds are at the risk of dying out. Yeah, actually going completely extinct. Bird populations in the U.S. and Canada have already declined by about 30% over the last several decades. We're talking about almost 3 billion birds. And the new data is seen as a call to action to reverse this disturbing species die-off, because the loss of birds is literally the canary in the coal mine for the future health of us human beings on this planet Earth. We're going to begin the hour with a closer look as we welcome Jody Willis. She's president of the Duval Audubon Society. She joins us now in studio along with board member Carolyn Antman. Ladies, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us. And here's our question to callers. What's your reaction to news that two new landmark studies say we could lose our birds, all of them? No birds. Give us a call, 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInjax. And our Facebook page is open. Jody Willis, president of Duval Audubon, let's begin with you. There are two studies out about this. What do they show?
Actually, Carolyn is better at answering that particular question.
Okay, Carolyn.
Well, the first study talks about the actual decline of the total amount of birds. That's the Cornell study. And it says that roughly 29% of the total number of birds has declined since 1970. The second study focuses on climate change and how climate change is going to reduce habitat for specific species. And that study says that out of the 604 species studied, 64% or 389 species are at risk.
And how is climate change driving habitat loss of birds, and which birds are dying off?
Well, for specifics of the study, you really need to go to the website audubon.org, because it's hard to kind of summarize 604 birds. But basically, as the climate changes, habitats change. And sometimes as the warm air moves north, the new habitat that the bird would occupy is already developed. It's big cities. The wetlands aren't there. The plants aren't migrating as fast as the birds. And that's some of the problem.
Okay, so Jody Willis, why should we care about this?
If you don't have birds and you don't have people, it's as simple as that. Birds, they're the canary in the coal mine.
Yeah, literally.
Yes. They are great pest control. They're great for pest control. I can't say enough about birds and how wonderful they are. But
no, I need you to explain so people really understand this. Why is this such a big deal? Why should human beings be worried about this?
Well, I think that if birds can't survive, it's because they're part of the food chain. And if birds can't survive, then a lot of other species aren't surviving. And ultimately, humans can't survive. Natural habitats, the same things that affect the birds are the things that are going to affect people. Plastic pollution, water pollution, air pollution, poisons in the environment. These are things that maybe the birds get hit first, but we're going to be hit too.
And I'm looking at your website, audubon.org. Two-thirds of North American birds are at risk. So any bird you care to name, the robin you hear chirping outside your window, the egrets and herons you see swooping around the intercoastal waterway, the eagle flying high above, a whole range of species is being threatened. Isn't that right?
That's right. That's right. And again, certain species are doing better than others, and certain species we've done more to protect their habitat than other species. This first study about the number of decline overall showed that birds in grasslands are more affected than birds in forests. But that's across the United States and Canada. That's less specific to Florida. In Florida, what's happening is southern birds are moving north, and if the habitats that the Everglades and the southern areas provided in the past, if they're not here in North Florida, then the birds have nowhere to go.
It's 549-2937 to talk about a world without birds. And as I speak with the heads of the Duval Audubon Society, you can learn more about this at the website audubon.org. I just went to your little widget on audubon.org to find out what the vulnerable birds are in Northeast Florida. And according to Audubon, highly and moderately vulnerable birds could lose more than half of their current range. That's the area where they live, as they are forced to search for suitable habitat and climate conditions elsewhere. The highly vulnerable species right here in our area, I'm going to read this now, are the red-headed woodpecker, the gray kingbird, the fish crow, the brown-headed nuthatch, the brown thrasher, the eastern towhee, the boat-tailed grackle, the pine warbler, and the yellow-throated warbler. Those are the most vulnerable species, but there are many others that have moderate vulnerability. These are more well-known to us, like the Canadian geese, the sandhill crane, the kingbird, sparrows, and others that are listed here. So that, I think, hopefully gives people an idea of what we could potentially be looking at. You just wouldn't see these birds anymore. You wouldn't hear birds chirping. There'd be no birds.
Correct.
And that's upsetting and scary.
It's completely upsetting. But there are things that people can do to help stem the tide of this crisis. And that's the other thing we want to talk about today. There are 12 actions that people can take in their daily lives that can help birds with their survival.
That's right. The Duval Audubon Society has 12 calls to action you can do at any time to reverse this ecological crisis. And it is a crisis. We will go to those 12 points in a moment. First, though, we're going to take some calls. What is your reaction to news that two major studies are predicting a future world without birds? That's unless we take urgent action to reduce carbon emissions here and around the world. 549-2937. Janelle is in Ortega Forest. Hi, Janelle. Good morning.
Good morning. Every time I see clear cutting for some of the new developments, I think about how much habitat we're losing for birds, and it shocks me because we've had tree laws in effect when my parents built their house here in Ortega Forest. They could not clear cut all the trees, and we're able to have birds, but when we cut down all the trees, that's really affecting the habitat of the birds.
Mm-hmm. Clear cutting of trees. Yeah, that's Janelle in Ortega Forest. Thanks for that. Carolyn Antman with Duval Audubon. How does that factor in?
Well, first of all, I have to agree with her that this clear cutting is a relatively new phenomenon. They used to try and save trees in a neighborhood, and we used to value trees in a neighborhood. And the first thing that we need to do is change the regulations so that this is not the least expensive, most acceptable way of developing new neighborhoods. But in the meantime, what we can do is with our own yards and make sure that, first of all, we are planting native plants in our own yards. The advantage of natives is that you don't have to water them as much. They don't need pesticides. They don't need fertilizers. And in fact, we do want to cut down or eliminate pesticides and fertilizers in our own yard environments. We can create a huge habitat for birds just in our own backyards.
That's an easy way anybody can take action. Here's some other tips from the Duval Audubon Society. Support candidates who care about climate change. Here's one that is easier said than done. Eliminate or reduce your use of single-use plastics, especially straws and balloons. Bring your recyclable bags to the grocery store. That's a big change in habit, but that's something everyone can do. Use traps instead of rat poison. That damages bird species. Try not to use herbicides and pesticides in your yard. Create a river-friendly yard, as the St. John's Riverkeeper likes to say. Use pesticides that don't harm the water supply. And then here's one I want to talk to you about. Keep your house cats indoors and eliminate feral cat colonies. We're getting emails about this. Here's one from David. What effect do stray cats and the people that feed them without abating their reproduction have on bird populations? And full disclosure, I have nothing but love for my colleagues here at WJCT that feed a small feral cat colony outside our building, because I know that they do it with love and good intentions in their heart. However, the data shows, doesn't it, that these feral cat colonies, even if the cats are spayed or neutered, are very damaging. Can you talk about that?
Absolutely. All cats, regardless of whether you feed them or not, will still kill. And they don't just kill birds, they kill mammals as well. Now, the feral cats are non-native predators. And so our native bird species and our native mammals don't have any equipment, so to speak, to defend themselves against them, because they were never here to begin with.
Doesn't a feral cat colony just kill everything within a 5-mile radius, basically?
Absolutely.
So it disrupts the natural order of the ecosystem, is my understanding.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes. So the number two cause of this problem in the United States today, it's really scary. There are probably about 60 to 100 million free-ranging cats.
So what do you say to cat lovers who, you know, might be reluctant to stop feeding that little colony? How do you convince them to stop, and what happens to those cats? What do you say to them?
Well, whether they stop feeding them or not is irrelevant, because they will still kill.
But they're not in a concentrated little unit anymore, right? If you stop feeding them, they disperse.
Well, even if they disperse, The problem is reality, that the situation is so dire for birds that we really do need to take measures to eliminate the colonies altogether.
So wait a minute. So you're advocating euthanizing these colonies. Is that right?
Yes.
Wow. Okay, so that's a controversial stance.
Yes, it is.
And I'm sure lots of folks might disagree. But if you could explain a little bit more why you are taking that position as representatives of the Audubon Society. Carolyn, how about you?
Well, the thing is that, and it isn't just feral cats, it's all cats that are outdoors. If a cat kills, if there are 60 to 100 million free-ranging cats in the U.S., and each one kills one bird a month, that's a heck of a lot of birds. And that's just killing one bird a month.
If we kill cats to save birds, isn't that also disruptive? We're killing off one population to save another?
Well,
Go ahead.
Again, these are non-native predators. Certainly, if they were a native predator, I would be upset, but they're not native.
How are cats not native to a region?
The domestic shorthair, which is kind of a confusing name, are basically descended from African cats. They're not the lynx. They're not the American bobcat, by the way. And therefore, the native bird species here have no way to protect themselves against them. They haven't evolved with these particular cats. It's like the pythons in the Everglades. Same problem. Non-native species killing everything, because there is no way that the native species have to protect themselves against these predators.
So what you're urging for those that might not be completely in your camp on this. At the minimum, you're urging people to keep their cats indoors.
I'm a cat lover. I have two cats. I've always had cats. They've always been indoors, and they've always been much healthier, and they live much longer. An outdoor life for a cat is a very shortened life and a very painful one.
Okay, let's go to some calls about this. It's 549-2937. Eric on the South Side. Go ahead, Eric.
Good morning, good morning. This is a favorite topic of mine. I live on a large piece of property for many decades, and I provide food and water and lots of shelter for my birds. I've noticed a dramatic decrease. No more red-winged blackbirds. I have a few owls. Mockingbirds have pretty much disappeared. The blue jays, rarely do I see them anymore. And over the decades, I would look forward to my nesting pairs. I might have a dozen nesting pairs in my ligustrums and viburnums. They're pretty much all gone. The feral cat population is out of control. I see cafeterias where people are taking out water and food for cats. What is the responsibility of the Jacksonville Animal Control for busting up this illegal feeding? And isn't it not illegal to have a domestic cat running around the neighborhood? So if we lose our birds, it's going to be a horror story. We're just going to be overloaded by every kind of vermin out there. I don't have pest control. I take care of my birds, and they take care of all the problems in my yard. Thanks for listening, ladies.
Okay, Eric, thank you for that. Lots of calls as we speak with the Duval Audubon Society about two new studies warning us human beings that we are at risk of losing the entire bird population of North America eventually if we do not take action on climate change. What are your thoughts? 549-2937. Dave is in Ponte Vedra. Hi, Dave.
Good morning. I want to reiterate the analogy one of the Audubon representatives made to the python population in the Everglades. We all love domestic cats. They are pets, but they are non-native species, and they are predators. And loss of bird species affects the ecosystem up and down the food chain. It collapse in one part of the food chain, ecosystem will ripple throughout the remaining parts. Birds are predator species for fish and mammals, and they are prey species for native predators. And you cannot disrupt one part of it without having that spread throughout the ecosystem. We are witnessing a sixth mass extinction on the planet today. It is related to climate change, but it would be going on anyway because of the loss of habitat and the expansion of human development in areas all throughout the world.
That's right, Dave. Thank you so much for your call. Dave clearly knows his stuff.
Yes, I couldn't have said it better. Thank you.
And he's talking about this predicted sixth mass extinction, which sounds so dire, a dystopian movie that we see every other week, right? But this is real life. We could be looking at the mass extinction of not just bird species, but other species too, Carolyn.
That's right. That's right. And it is dire. And it's very frightening to think of what we're leaving for our children and our grandchildren to have to deal with. So it's important to do everything that you possibly can to help at least mitigate this. And that's why we are publishing this list of the 12 things that we feel that you can do. And everything on this list helps not just the birds, but all of the natural wildlife and all of us too.
Yeah, there are some other tips on here, like buying shade-grown coffee, enrolling your company in the National Audubon's Lights Out program. That involves turning off outside lights on tall buildings at night, little things like that.
That's during migration only.
When birds are migrating.
Yes. Most birds migrate at night, and lights on top of buildings distract them and causes them to circle around the buildings until they die from exhaustion or they're killed by other predators.
It's 549-2937. Ben is in Palatka. Hi, Ben. Good morning.
Yes. You know, thinking on a larger scale, we need to be more cognizant that, and this attains to dealing with climate change, itself in the big that bigger picture too, is that overall land use, if we don't have wild areas, and especially in the Southeast, in those wild areas, if we're not willing to tolerate the smoke from prescribed burning to manage the natural ecosystem the way it needs to be managed, we're kind of spinning our wheels with all the rest of it, because with the discussion of the evolving of the birds without cats, well, the birds evolved, especially in the Southeast, with a fire-managed ecosystem naturally. And we need to get used to the idea that we need a little bit of smoke in our urban areas, and especially in our urban rural interface areas. And we need to look at that as a positive, something that's doing something for our environment. Because as we buy conservation lands, if we don't manage them, if we just let them go, if we suppress fire totally and completely, then all of these species, not just birds, are going. We will have wasted our public dollars and our public effort. And that's something Audubon really ought to think about supporting, is a change in that, to liberalize those laws and reduce the liability for people that are doing a good thing like that.
Ben, thanks for that. Ben in Palatka, what about that?
Well, certainly Audubon supports prescribed burns. For example, the Kirtland's warbler, which is only in a small area in Michigan, favors a short pine forest, and there are prescribed burns in there because of the food that the bird needs. So we are not opposed at all to prescribed burning.
Okay, here's an email, meanwhile, from Jennifer on the South Side. She says, I'm listening to you talk about the effect of feral cats on the bird population. I just wanted to point out that the Jacksonville Humane Society is having a free spay and neuter clinic on November 10th for community cats. If they are spayed or neutered, they can't reproduce. Fewer feral cats means fewer predators for birds. So thank you for that, Jennifer. That's at the Humane Society on Beach Boulevard, looks like, on November 10th. Let me get to a couple of tweets for you ladies. Here's one from Dave. Birds are an element of the ecosystem. They help in the propagation of plant species. They control pests. They are prey species for predators. They are predators of fish and mammal species. Upsetting a significant element of the system cascades throughout the system. Here's another tweet. Is the loss of birds related to the steep decline in insect populations?
Yes, absolutely. One of the things that we're most concerned about is the use of pesticides and herbicides on your lawn. They are the neonicotinoids, especially, which is, for example, Roundup, are notorious for the precipitous decline in pollinators and butterflies and bees, of course, as well as birds. So we are not alone in this. We oppose the use of any type of pesticide or herbicide like this. And so does St. John's River Keeper and the Garden Club of America.
Comments on our Facebook page as well. Paula writes, I can't imagine a world without seagulls, crows, grackles, and buzzards. But kill that little group of cats who hangs out on my street? No way. Mike writes, I let my backyard return to nature, and I've seen many of the bird species return. Thanks for that, Mike.
Yes, thank you.
549-2937. Rebecca is in Lakewood. Hi, Rebecca. Good morning.
Hello. I just wondered if we are doing any harm to the ecosystem by feeding birds with bird feeders and such, or is that
no
encouraged?
No, that is encouraged. Thank you. Bird feeders are only one source of food for birds. A lot of them eat berries, seeds, suet. They're opportunity feeders, so it supplements the diet that they have. They're not completely dependent upon bird feeders as one source.
Here's an email from Sandy. I see a lot of bluebirds. Are they more common now?
Yes, thank God.
And what's going on with that?
Well, we've been, over the past at least 10 or 15 years, we've been putting up bluebird boxes because they like to nest in bluebird boxes. Basically, they nest in dead trees, in the cavities in dead trees, because they like insects as well. But because their decline has happened over such a long period of time, people became very concerned and started building bluebird nest boxes, and the population all over the United States has rebounded thanks to that, thanks to our help.
Okay, it's 549-2937. Ellen is in Mandarin. Ellen, good morning. Go ahead.
Good morning. Hi. I would just like to add to that, you know, I just did make a contribution to the Duval Audubon Society.
Thank you very much.
And I'm sorry to say that that's going to be my last contribution after listening to your discussion on the feral cats.
So you don't agree with their position on the feral cat population?
No, I have had more, unfortunately, and I live in Mandarin, I've had more rats dropped on my back patio than I have birds. I haven't had the first bird, as a matter of fact. In the last month, I've had 4 rats, 1 bat, and 2 ground moles. My outside backyard cats are fixed. They're fed. They leave me gifts instead of consuming what they kill. But I don't see the negative aspect. I would see more problems with, okay, you're saying don't feed the cats, but feed the birds. That's almost like a hypocrisy. And, I don't treat my backyard with chemicals purposely. I do it more for the cats than I do for the birds. But it's a trickle-down effect. And you have just roused up my next-door community, I'm sure, and just after we got them calmed down, saying it's illegal to kill them. If they're tipped, they're fixed, it's illegal to kill them. The Humane Society will tell you so. And now you have just riled them up and instigated it all over again.
Okay, Ellen. So, and I hear you.
I'm really upset.
I understand.
You know, you're talking without even thinking of the consequences.
Well, you know what? I really appreciate your call, and I certainly understand your position. That said, there is science behind these studies, and they look at large-scale data sets, not just the experience of one pet owner, although I have a cat, too, and I understand where you're coming from. So let me ask you, ladies, as a follow-up, how do you convince someone like Ellen that the science on this is pretty clear and that cat kills by cats after habitat loss, that is the biggest threat to birds? Either one of you, go. Please, this is your chance to make the case. Make it.
I think that just the fact that your cats have brought in so many mammals, that doesn't mean they're not killing birds.
Right.
It's opportunistic. And here again, like Melissa said, you're looking at your backyard. You're not looking at the broad data. And you may be only talking about your personal cats, and we are trying to deal with the feral cat issue as a whole. And even when we spay and neuter feral cats, they tend to have a very short and disturbing lifetime. We can spay and neuter them. If we could spay and neuter them all, they would probably be gone shortly.
Can you understand, though, why people react so emotionally?
Absolutely.
They love these animals, and it's scary. I think it's upsetting on an emotional level. It's easy. You're looking at the data. They're feeling the emotions.
Well, and I look at my cat, and I think, you know, I wouldn't want him killed, but at the same time, I don't want him out there killing when he's fat and well fed.
Yes.
But I think it's much easier to say kill the pythons because so many people don't like snakes than to say...
Yeah, python's not going to curl up
right
on your lap and purr.
But I think if you were to become more familiar with a feral cat population and to see what dire straits they live in, you would understand that part of the problem is just people not spaying and neutering their own cats that creates the feral cat population. And the fact that they're mammals and they're furry make us feel more attached to them without really thinking about what their lives really are.
Susanna in North Jacksonville, and then I'll go back to you, Jody. Susanna, go ahead.
Oh, thank you, Melissa. I live in North Jacksonville, and I live in a neighborhood where people move out and leave cats. So there's a lot of feral cats, and no more homeless pets also will spay or neuter a feral cat. But I do want to say something to rebuke with that. I think her name was Ashley. Yes, you can feed them, and yes, I've done a lot. I think I have 67 of them that I've neutered or spayed.
And 67?
Yes.
Why so many?
Because people move out and leave them, and then the cats have kittens, and you can't kill a live little animal. So I wait till the kittens are old enough, and if you feed cats, it attracts them. And then I take them, and they neuter them, and I take them home. And the lady that was just speaking, yes, they do have short, very short and dire lives. They don't last very long because people harm them or they get hit by cars.
Yeah.
You know, but there is a downside, too, to having all the cats. You can feed them, and they're fat and happy. They are still ace predators. I mean, they can hunt. They still kill things. They kill squirrels. They kill birds and rats, yes. But they still are going to hunt. It's just their nature.
Okay, I mean, Susanna, thank you. Upset. Thank you for that. Yeah. Okay, Jody.
Well, let me just add this, because the other lady talked about her cat, the feral cats, bringing rats and moles and other mammals to her doorstep. Let me just say this, that those mammals are food for birds. So a feral cat killing those deprives our predators, such as eagles and owls, of that food.
Let's take just one more call on this. We'll get away from the cat topic for a minute. Lisa in Ortega. Hi, Lisa. Go ahead.
Yes, I appreciate what the ladies are saying. Thank you so much. I wanted to reemphasize the importance of native plants to the ecosystem. 90% of all insect species are native plant specialists. And, of course, insects are a major part of the food chain. So if we start losing them, we have trouble. But beyond that, that extends to our birds and other animals as well. They depend on our native plants. And we do know, we've seen studies of chickadees where the chickadee moms will fly right past an exotic tree or plant, like, say, the crepe myrtle, and fly directly to a live oak or an elm where they find the caterpillars that they need to survive. So, and Doug Tallamy's book, Bringing Nature Home, highlights the species, the native plant species that are most important for providing biodiversity. And number one on that list is the live oak. And he lists on down to about 100 of the different native plants and how many species they support, the live oak supporting over 500 butterfly and plant species. Butterfly and moth species. So I just wanted to mention that so people realize the importance of planting those native plants in their yards
sure.
and how much good that will do.
Lisa, thank you so much for that. And thanks to everyone who weighed in on this. Again, I want to refer everyone to the website audubon.org. And what else, what's the final message you'd like to leave people with about this? Carolyn?
Well, we want to leave you with an optimistic message. Because there are things that you can do. Go to our website, DuvalAudubon.org, for the list of things that you can do. If you pick even one or two of these things, it will help. If we all do something, it will help. We can make changes.
Thank you, ladies. Jody Willis and Carolyn Antman, both with the Duval Audubon Society. Thanks for coming by.
Thank you.
Later in the hour, some Halloween tips for making sure your little ones trick-or-treat safely this Halloween. Also, author John Kenny. We'll be right back.
This Going Green segment is made possible by A1A Solar.
WGCT's podcast Oddball is a Jacksonville story about a UFO investigation, a mansion in the woods, and how one shiny object silenced a family.
Jerry just wanted to know what it was.
She would have a gut instinct and she would pursue it.
After a while, it's just too much publicity. She just not want to talk about it anymore.
Can we put the mystery of the strange metal ball to rest? Check it out at oddballpodcast.com.
November 11th of each year is the day that we ensure veterans know that we deeply appreciate the sacrifices they have made in their lives to keep our country free. Help WJCT honor our veterans during the month of November by submitting a name that we may add to our on-air thank you announcements. Go to wjct.org/veterans.
Take a drive with us into the Blues Horizon. The best in classic and modern blues. Every Monday and Wednesday night at 11. Right here on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, with the same brilliant wit that made his book Love Poems for Married People such a hit, author John Kenny is back. And this time it's a brand new collection of poems, this time taking on the greatest joy in life, our children. Kenny covers it all from newborns and toddlers, sleep deprivation, the terrible twos, the terrible teens, and between back-to-school shopping, summer vacations that never end, the awkwardness of puberty, that millennial that won't leave your house even though they're out of college, and more. These poems remind us that a parent's job is never done, whether they like it or not. I'm going to read a section of just one of these poems. As he writes, "I am fully aware that the wheels on the bus go round and round. I get it. I know about the wheels and the horn and the babies. Everyone knows that. Here's something you might not know. The daddy on this bus is thinking, this is not what I signed up for. And maybe the driver on the bus is thinking the exact same thing. Maybe he looks over at the daddy and he doesn't go, move on back. Maybe instead he nods and smiles. The daddy nods and smiles. And the driver hits the gas and goes zoom, 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 so fast that the mommies on the bus say, Jesus Christ Almighty, slow down. And the driver screeches to a halt at the corner because he sees a sign for a bar called Open at 9 a.m. He and the daddy get off the bus and go into the bar and call an Uber because this bus is out of service. Sing that verse, why don't you? Okay, so here's a little more from Kenny about his latest book, Love Poems for People with Children.
I wrote this because this is what, you know, the marketing people call a opportunity to sell more books. That's a lie. I wrote it because my editor, the wonderful Sally Kim at Penguin Random House, said after Love Poems for Married People came out, she said, you know, we have like poems that we did not use for the first book because they were a little bit more about having kids. And I wonder if we do another book at Life with Children. You know, and do the whole span from sort of those newborns and the late nights to the dreaded teenage years to 26-year-old millennials living with you after college. So that's what we did. Most of them are made up, but I hope they have a ring of emotional truth. What I did for this one is similar to what I did for the last one, which is send out a pleading email to a group of parent friends and say, you know, give me your worst kid stories. What I'm looking for is a funny title that I can then expand on. So while not autobiographical, I can certainly relate to them. Man, does it go by fast. My daughter was getting, you know, ready to go somewhere the other day, a birthday party. And, you know, she's almost 11. And I'm like, how did you get so tall? How did that happen? It just blows by. I don't understand it, but it is by far the most wonderful thing that's ever happened to me. It's also the most exhausting.
Oh, isn't that the truth? Love Poems for People with Children is on bookstore shelves now. Okay. Halloween, of course, is tomorrow night, and our own station manager, David Luckin, is here to talk a little bit about a Halloween tradition on the radio. Hey.
And if you were there back in 1938 on CBS Radio, this is what you heard.
We take you now to Grover's Mill, New Jersey.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Carl Phillips again, out at the Wilmot Farm, Grover's Mill, New Jersey. Professor Pearson and myself made the 11 miles from Princeton in 10 minutes.
That's what happened, and it scared America like you would not believe, including Canada.
Canada got the fright, too.
Canada were listening, and you can look this up and read all the news reports, and it changed everything.
This was Orson Welles' War of the Worlds.
Produced by the Mercury Theater, his theater group on radio, and it has Ray Collins and all the famous stars from the Mercury Theater. He was only like 22 or 23 years old when he did this. And then he did Citizen Kane, which made him a lifelong icon in the film industry. But this scared America. People turned on the radio and they thought it was actually happening.
They thought aliens were invading on Halloween night.
In New Jersey. And there was a disclaimer at the beginning, but of course, like this program, once you get into the show, who remembers the disclaimer?
Yeah.
And it scared the heck out of America and Canada.
Because it was so convincing.
It sounded so real, like that toss you just heard. Now we go to New Jersey where they've just landed and, you know, Joe's, it reminds me of Oddball, you know, our podcast.
Our new podcast.
Because this all happens in someone's backyard where they're there. But Orson Welles and radio theater, as they call it, theater of the mind, it seemed so believable in 1938.
It's a reminder of how powerful this medium is because it paints a picture in your mind without a single real image. It's all imagined.
There. Yeah, that's why they call it theater of the mind. It's perfect. They talk and you close your eyes and you're there. Of course, we remind people every Sunday night we do radio theater, 2 hours worth from 7 to 9 with this coming Sunday. We've got W.C. Fields. So if you want to sit around and laugh Sunday night, we've got the master, W.C. Fields, and I can't remember what the second hour is.
And
but
old-time radio is such a hit with our listeners. It's just enduringly great. This stuff is almost 100 years old, and it's just as fresh and fun to listen to now as it was when they first recorded it.
And I've heard from listeners in their 20s who said, I sat in the car in the driveway having a driveway moment waiting for the mystery to end. You know, because they were driving all the way home.
Original podcasts, weren't they?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's compelling theater of the mind is what you call it. So tomorrow night, don't forget, first hour of Electro Lounge, we will play War of the Worlds from 1938.
That is a must listen to. That's tomorrow night on Halloween. So if you're out and about, tune in to 89.9 for a spooky listen. Speaking of which, in a moment, some safety tips for kids and adults as you go trick-or-treating. We'll be right back.
Brass, organ, winds, and percussion is the Jacksonville Symphony's third annual concert, featuring the wonderful musicians of the symphony and Greg Zelek on the mighty Bryan concert organ. It will be an afternoon of powerful music. November 3rd. Tickets and more at jacksymphony.org.
On the next Fresh Air, my guest will be Sam Esmail, creator, writer, and director of the TV series Mr. Robot, starring Rami Malek as a hacker with dissociative identity disorder. His attempts to save the world are at risk of destroying it. The fourth and final season is underway on the USA Network. Join us today at noon on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
Hunter Biden's work with the Ukrainian energy company is part of a long history of the relatives of famous politicians seeking to cash in on connections.
Very often there's nothing wrong. Nothing is actually done that's illegal, but that's different than does it become a scandal. It looks bad.
Money, family, and politics this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
The utility PG&E is pulling the plug on millions of customers in California, but its woes highlight a bigger problem. The services we rely on to keep the lights on and our water clean are in desperate need of upgrades. America's struggle to stay home and stay safe. Next time on 1A.
Today at 10 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, if you're sending out trick-or-treaters tomorrow night for Halloween, you want to make sure they enjoy the night and stay safe. We've got some tips for you now from former CIA agent Emily McCarthy, the founder of GoRuck. More about that in a minute. First, let's get to Halloween. Emily, good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
So you know about safety. You worked in the CIA as a case officer post-9/11. You've been in some hot spots in your career, now based here on the First Coast. You've got some good advice for all us civilians as we send the kids out on Halloween. I have questions for you about little kids and older kids. I've got older kids who are old enough to go out by themselves, but you still worry a little bit. What advice do you have for parents for tomorrow night?
Yes, I'm glad you brought up older kids because people immediately think about younger kids about this. However, you know, like you said, they're operating independently. You're sending them out on their own. They don't want to be with mom or dad anymore in a costume per se. So with older kids, I would say it's all about, you know, planning in advance. We do a lot of rehearsals in the government, military, and in the agency as well. And you just want to go over with them the plan. So that means sitting down with them, pulling up a map, deciding where they're going to go. What area of the neighborhood are they going to hit? What should they avoid? You know, encouraging them to look further, you know, check their surroundings, keep your head on the swivel, like we like to say.
Mm-hmm.
And that means, you know, don't go up to a house that's not well lit and make sure they know who's joining their group at all times.
And what's the plan for younger kids?
The plan for younger kids is also important. You need to feed them beforehand.
That's a good idea.
Something healthy to sustain them through the night, because the sugar will, you want the sugar to hit them later when you're back home safe and sound. Rehearsals are also good, but you have to start those in advance. You have to take them out. I have a local ruck club, and we get together on the weekends, and we're practicing street safety and seeing which kids pair better with other kids. Often it's a younger kid with an older child who will be able to, you know, pull them back if a car comes and make sure that they're being safe. But also, you know, you have to think about the ones that aren't rational yet, the children that won't be able to make a good decision and don't understand street safety. So you have to have a way to immobilize them, either a baby carrier, a wagon where you can strap them in, a stroller, because you can let them out to go up to a door. But when it comes to the street, you want to be able to keep them safe.
This is a good tip from Emily. Write your phone number on your child's forearm. That way, if they get separated, they can go to an adult and say, here's my mom's phone number. Little kids might not be able to memorize it, right?
Well, not just little kids, Melissa.
Even older kids.
No one really memorizes phone numbers anymore.
That's a good point.
But everyone has a phone. So teaching your kid that I'm going to put my phone number in a Sharpie on your forearm. And if you get into trouble or if you get separated, find someone that looks safe. I often tell my children, look for a mother with kids or look for a father with kids and tell them, I've lost my parent. Can you please dial this number?
That's such a great idea. You also say, take a picture of your child beforehand, just in case.
Yeah. So people take photos willy-nilly because we love to take photos these days and it's accessible on our camera phones. But there's a really practical reason to do this. Before you go into any sort of crowded area, especially on Halloween night, especially when they're in costume, you want to take a picture of your child. So if you do lose them, you can show someone exactly what they look like.
Last but not least, let's talk about GoRuck, your company.
Yes.
Tell us about it.
Yeah, so we're a Jacksonville-based company that has roots in special forces as well as the intelligence community. My husband and I started it back in 2008 in Washington, D.C., but we moved it back home where we're from. And we are all about building communities and talking about, you know, ways to be safe and enjoy life.
Which we all want to do, especially as the holidays kick off. So thank you so much, Emily. Happy trick-or-treating. And thanks for sharing this with all of our listeners.
Thanks for having me.
She's former CIA agent Emily Mahoney, the co-founder of GoRuck. And happy trick-or-treating, everybody. By the way, I don't know if you heard about this, but kids all over the state have signed this petition at change.org demanding that there be no school this Friday, the day after Halloween. You know, I can't say I blame them, honestly. That's our show. Thanks so much for being with us. And thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Heather Schatz. Michelle Corum is our director. Our news director is Jessica Palumbo. Bill Bortsfield runs our digital program here at WJCT News. And we always want your feedback. Send those emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. On tomorrow's show, how to prevent human trafficking in Florida. Florida's a hotbed for this evil practice. We'll take a look at what activists are doing to address it. That's tomorrow. I'm Melissa Ross. Thanks so much for listening. And if you're catching our rebroadcast tonight, keep listening for some great music. We'll be back tomorrow morning.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.